Okay, this session is the Doctrine and Covenants, the Evolution of the Doctrine and Covenants Text, a Preliminary and Exploratory Study. As you've probably heard by now, we just ask that all cell phones be turned off and be respectful and attentive to the speaker. It is a mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. The session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation at the registration desk. So your support goes directly to keeping symposiums and 40 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both the audience and the presenters to stay within the framework of that time frame. So this session is about the Doctrine and Covenants. The study uses methodologies developed in the biological sciences to evaluate the development of the DNC printed text. Phylogenic patterns and a small number of individual sections common in both RLDS Community of Christ and LDS editions will be analyzed. Insights and comparisons between these two textual groups will be presented. These two groups will be distinguished from early 19th century editions from which they are both descended. So this sounds like it will be really interesting, and we're excited to have you here, Bill, and to give us this information. So we'll turn it over to you.
So what this is a study of is how different texts, in this case the printed text, of Doctrine and Covenants has evolved over time. It's been long recognized that many different manuscripts, I'll show you giving examples from some of Chaucer's work, a New Testament example, an Old Norse that have been in some studied by other researchers, and we see the development of various variant texts. And these can be analyzed in much the same way that an evolutionary biologist might, analyze the relationship between closely related, or maybe in some cases not so closely related, groups of organisms. And this is called phylogenetic research, okay? The elucidation of evolutionary relationships. In more textual studies, now I'm not a textual critic. I'm a biologist. My background is in systematic and evolutionary biology. But if this were, if anyone is here that has some textual background, then you'd know that this application to the study of various texts and manuscripts is called stematics. And the terminology there, a stemma, would be like a family or a group of texts to which certain things, different variants might belong to. Okay. In the past couple of decades, various methodologies that have been developed in biology, like numerical taxonomy, phylogenetic software, have been found to be very useful in looking at the relationships between different groups of texts and looking at how they might be related to each other. So just some examples before we look at DNC of texts that have been analyzed and appeared in peer-reviewed studies. The Canterbury Tales is actually a Canterbury Tales project, where one of the things they do is look at the different textual variants and look at relationships between different groups. The particular one here is the Wife of Bath. This was in the journal Nature, prestigious scientific journal. So this appears in a peer-reviewed article. 98. So you can see different groups that they were able to elucidate based on some of the characters that they analyzed. I'm not going to be showing you a Slitz tree. Mine's a little bit different. I mean, I'm showing you a cladogram. You'll see what a cladogram is. It's a little easier on the eyes. It'll look a little bit more like this. It's more of a phylogram. Here is a phylogenetic analysis of various manuscripts of an Old Norse poem, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the name there, but not speaking Norse. This was actually carried out by a biologist, so I'm not the first biologist to do that. Bob O'Hara and Peter Robinson are actually well-known systematists. So, again, you see different relationships. You see different clades that are arising as they analyze these texts. And here's one that Spencer and Watchell Howell did on the Epistle of James. Again, this is a reduced median network. Again, you see various groups starting to arise. relationships. These ones kind of coalesce kind of toward the center there. But again, these methodologies, sometimes they get a little abstruse. I'm not going to go too technical here, but they are useful in elucidating relationships between different groups of things, whatever you happen to be looking at. The objectives of this study are to kind of do a preliminary and exploratory analysis of the early printed versions of Doctrine and Covenants. Preliminary, this is kind of getting some, this is new data. I'm trying to further develop this to include more sections, kind of get a more complete picture of what's going on. I've only done a few sections here. Exploratory, I'm kind of exploring a methodology and working out how best to approach this. What I've done here is just analyze, again, just a small number of sections, compared them with a number of different handwritten and printed texts, and hopefully to develop some sort of methodology as I go along. So this is a list of, this is the first part of the text listed here. So we have these five here. Two handwritten manuscripts, then the Book of Commandments, and then the 1835 and 1845 printed editions. The good news, I don't know if you want to go to pursue this part on your own, actual interactive photographs of these are actually available on the Joseph Smith Papers website. Just look for the corresponding section numbers in the edition of the DNC page of that website, and you can actually pull up the actual documents themselves, and they'll have over to the side a little place that's got a written out translation, or not translation, but transcript of what it said. Some of these handwritten things get a little hard to look at. Okay, so that is available there if anyone just is curious to look at that kind of stuff. Other editions that I looked at were 14 LDS post 1844, and I'll tell you what 1844 in a little while, but what fall into what I call the more modern branch LDS versions. And then I was only able to find thus far only five versions that are our LDS or Community of Christ. I see the little booth out there. Okay. So those were some of the texts. And what I did for each of the sections that I looked at, and these are the sections that I analyzed for this study. Now the numbering here is for the current LDS version here. As probably most of you know there. Those numberings have changed over time. And as well as differ between the modern LDS and Community of Christ versions. Okay, so there's a number of differences in terms of how the sections are numbered. So kind of as a point of reference, we use the, I'm just kind of using the current LDS, the 2013 version, I believe it is, the one that appears up on the church website. Okay. I coded the text. What I did basically was enter in a spreadsheet, Microsoft Excel, in each little cell, basically each word or punctuation point. That took a long time. Once that was done, I went back and started comparing the different versions that I entered in and started developing kind of a coding system. So if I was comparing two texts, okay, and there was something in one text that wasn't in the other text, okay, the text in which it was missing at that point, I put in a zero, okay? And then if there was, you know, any variance or, you know, something other than zero, depending on how many variants I had, it'd be a one or a two or a three or whatever I found for that particular section there. In a few cases, got up to six variants. In a small number of cases. Okay. Generally, I only coded, individual words. and punctuation points, look for differences in capitalization. And there are some variations. Sometimes the main variation seems to be more in punctuation differences, but punctuation matters. Punctuation can affect meaning. There was some capitalization, alternative words, and spellings that came up in a number of different cases. Occasionally, I treated an entire phrase that as a single character, but that was only in a small number of cases. So I don't know how well you can see that on this. It looked bigger on my screen over at the college. But this is a spreadsheet, so I don't know if there's any way to make that look larger or not. But I would, again, enter in each cell word, and then we would code them, or I coded them as such.
Excuse me.
Sure.
Do you mind using the microphone?
Oh, is it mic?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. People can't hear?
I could. No, can you hear?
Okay. I'm used to talking without a microphone at school. So, the guy told me I'd even have to do like this, or so I have to do. Oh, the other people said I projected almost too loud. Must be the acoustics in the room. Okay, so phylogenetic analysis. Handwritten and printed versions were treated as OTUs, operational taxonomic units. That was just the individual texts themselves. Okay, so the handwritten version, each handwritten version was an OTU. Each of the printed texts, the Book of Commandments, the 1835 version, so on. In phylogenetic terminology, the handwritten versions were treated to what are called outgroups, or outgroup is kind of used in phylogenetic analysis to kind of give some sort of character orientation, to kind of give you a perspective on how the different characters would be evolving, I guess, with respect to the groups. Printed versions were treated as the in-groups. They were the groups of interest that we were analyzing. And did a bunch of other phylogenetic stuff, created a Nexus file, which is one of the standard file formats for evolutionary biology. I actually conducted a number of different analyses using something called maximum parsimony. That's not what I'm showing here. And then Bayesian analyses, which is what I'm showing here. Maximum parsimony just simply means, some of you may have heard of a principle called Occam's razor. Basically, the idea is, its application in phylogenetics is that, you know, the shortest number of steps that you get from one taxon to the next, from one OTU to the next, is most likely the correct lineage, okay? Bayesian analyses look at something called Bayesian probability. It was basically a likelihood type of approach, or comparable to some likelihood approaches. And again, I'm thinking that I wish I could see this. Okay, this is probably going to be a short thing here because at school the projection's a little bit different. Is there a way I can adjust? I reckon you know there's any way to magnify this. Maybe we'll try like this. Is that my computer at work? This came up just beautifully. I guess that's what happens. Okay, so we're looking at a little section of DNC3 just to kind of show you some of the variation that you might see. So at the top here was the, as it occurs in the current version, so the red, I've got red, that would correspond to DNC, the current version, and then the purple would be some alternative variant. So for example here in this here, this would be verse 16, this for as much is not in some of these earlier versions. It would have and accomplish my purposes for example. So this part here was added after some point after these original handwritten versions or the Book of Commandments. Just going to show you some things here. The biggest thing with the Revelations, the handwritten manuscript, was a complete lack of punctuation. Very little punctuation was utilized. I can get this thing to work on this thing. So, anyway, I just was wanting to show some of the variation. So this might be a quick presentation. Anyway, loaded up, coded these texts. And that's the Bayesian analysis. So what it shows here, using the Revelation, the handwritten manuscript as the outgroup, and then it shows these relationships. The Book of Commandments being at a very basal relationship within the cladogram here, and the 1835 and 1840 kind of branching down here, and then the RLDS and modern, meaning more modern since these two, since the 1844, these come out as different groups branching off from this point here. And one of the things we see early on is, for most of these sections, and there's some variation in this, is that we begin to see that different manuscript families have arisen, usually post the printing of 1844. So what we see that the RLDS group tends to form, with the exception here of the 1864, the rest of the RLDS manuscripts are a distinct family, and I had a lot more of the LDS manuscripts, printed texts, but clearly forming a clear and distinct family of texts. That one's a little bit better. Okay, can everyone see that one? Okay, so this is D&C 25. Again, the same thing. Things that are in red correspond to with the current version. The more bluish it's appearing there, but it's actually purple on my screen there, represents some sort of change. So here, keep, for example, is not capitalized. It is capitalized here. Very little punctuation. What punctuation do you ever find in these handwritten manuscripts? There was a tendency, it wasn't an absolute one, but there was a tendency to use these little symbols like this, the little and symbols, instead of actually writing the word out. Again, differences in capitalization that you see. Verily, comma, verily, only one verily here with no comma. Verily, verily, but only one comma. Same thing there. So we just, again, some examples of some of the variation that you might see looking at this. Cannot, one word here, but cannot, two words in the 1864 RLDS version. Okay, in the 52 RLDS, they went kind of a little more archaic modern English. Canst not. So we see differences in, again, word selection, what's capitalized, how things are punctuated. So this was section 25. Again, the whole section was looked at. Here is a little bit more clearer. The RLDS versions actually forming entirely, in this case, a complete family. All the RLDS versions joined together, okay? And then the LDS versions again joined together here, again forming a clear and distinct family. That was a tendency, but that didn't always occur, as we'll see in just a moment. These 1844, 1835 versions typically being different in terms of, you know, capitalization, choice of word, punctuation. spellings. Some words were spelled different ways than others. Now, that's another one. So let's look at that. So this is chapter 48, verses 2 and 3. Again, we see differences where they use, whether or not they're using the little and symbol, or actually have the word and, differences in capitalization, differences in the spelling of some words, differences in terms of punctuation. So we see that those become useful characters to evaluate when I'm coding. Okay. Now this one was a little different. In fact, most of them, there was some tendency to more or less clearly distinguish the RLDS versions from the LDS, but here, for this particular section, the RLDS versions were kind of nested in what would you could call just a basic general LDS lineage here. So there wasn't a clear distinction like we were seeing before. So this was the only time that happened in this analysis here. But we're seeing that the development of the manuscript here, these guys weren't necessarily all that different. They did form a kind of group together with the Book of Commandments, the 1835 and 1844 edition. So that was kind of unusual. In this case, some of these more recent versions were in many cases more closer to the handwritten manuscript and tend to deviate as much. Okay. Again, so this is section 62. Again, we see some of the same things here, differences, whether or not we use the actual word and, whether we're using the symbol, differences in punctuation, okay, and maybe many of these differences don't necessarily affect the meaning in some cases, but, you know, they are differences that you would look at if you were trying to evaluate manuscripts. So some places will have a semicolon, sometimes just a comma, sometimes nothing. Congregations capitalized here, but not capitalized in any of these other places. And was capitalized because this completes a sentence and this begins one here. But in these other cases, we don't have complete sentences. We have dividing two phrases, separating two phrases. So section 62, okay. This was a little bit different, but still we had a trend. The only main difference here was the 1864 version kind of comes out as a sister to the rest of these. Okay, so it's in a more basal, more primitive position relative to everything here. But the rest of the RLDS clearly separated from the LDS versions. And of course, the 1835, 1844 kind of being down here in more basal, suggesting that they're, again, more primitive texts in many respects than some of these other versions. Yes? In terms of meaning, there are more differences in meaning between the actual handwritten texts than the in the subsequent printed text. As far as our LDS, there might be some slight changes in terms of emphasis, but what would look like as a significant, completely different meaning being implied there, that was generally not something I saw, not in these anyway, what I've done here. The biggest differences were actually between the handwritten and the written manuscripts. Mostly there would be some things that were added in later on, apparently to kind of clarify certain things. Others, I'm not sure just exactly. In fact, I think I'll show you one. I think one that I got included here in just a moment. Certain things were added in that weren't there in the handwritten. So it would appear that they were either adding some things in to clarify some things, or I don't know what. Got some further revelation? I don't know. So, now this one, some of you are probably aware of the fact that in some of the 19th century versions, instead of saying Joseph Smith, or Signe Rigdon, they would say Gazalim or Enoch or Pelagorum and use these code names here. So, again, that's not in our current versions, and it's not in the handwritten one, but it was actually removed later on from the printed text in the early part of the 20th century, something like that. But we see, even then, we see differences in how they're listed here. So in the handwritten text, it'd be Servant Whitney instead of Newell K. Whitney, Servant Joseph instead of Joseph Smith Jr. Okay, Servant Sidney instead of Sidney Rigdon. Here we would talk about my servant Ahasda, my servant Gazalim or Enoch, my servant Pelagorum. Okay, and then later on they started putting in brackets in the text, Ahasda is Newell K. Whitney, and actually there are two different spellings of Ahasda that show up in these texts. So my servant Gazalim or Enoch was Joseph Smith Jr. Pelagorum was Sidney Rigdon. This also, so I have both manuscripts here. This is the only one where I had both manuscripts representing this particular section. The early handwritten sections have firm, alluding to, I assume, the United firm. And then later on, those are changed to order, referring to the United order. The United firm was kind of an early, what would you call it, an earlier precursor to the United order. It lasted about 1832 to 1834. What else do I want to point out here? Again, the usual punctuation differences. So we see differences in terms of punctuation, whether it's there or if there is punctuation, it might vary. Again, you might see a comma one place, a semicolon in another place. You might have periods or you might not. Variant spellings. Now, this one's pretty clear here. Again, it's another one where we see the RLDS text clearly and distinctly grouping together with regard to these kind of variants. And then we see, again, what I'm calling modern LDS forming distinct groups. Right there it is. So this little group here kind of represents the most recent versions of the LDS Doctrine and Covenants, and they're grouping together. So we see associations here again. The 1835 and 1844 versions forming a distinct group, usually from all of these. So So this, like I said, this is going to be probably a short one. But again, we see that the individual sections appear to have unique patterns of textual evolution. So it's not just a simple matter of, you know, looking at Doctrine and Covenants and say, oh, Doctrine and Covenants is this. We're seeing that the individual sections are evolving in individual distinct ways. In most of the analyses, saw that the Book of Commandments, D&C 1835 version and 1844 version, were very distinct in terms of their phylogenetic positions, where the and the RLDS versions and LDS versions in general, again, there were some exceptions to this and some variation, but generally speaking, in terms of, you know, what's actually printed in the text, formed different family groups. Where are we at? And I did a combined analysis, and that's probably what I'm going to leave you with here, is, again, when we combined all this together, that really came out. So the 1835 and 1844 versions, the Book of Commandments, all kind of in a more basal positions relative to the RLDS versions, again, in the combined analysis where you put everything in, forming a very clear, distinct family of texts. The LDS texts, very clearly and distinct group, well-defined, well-supported. The clade values here, the higher the number there, the better supported they are. So this is only just kind of a beginning for me. It's something I want to pursue and kind of do a more complete analysis of the, at least of the sections that they have in common. I thank you for your patience in trying to work some of these things out, the technical matters. If people have questions or what clarifications, yes. Oh, I've seen that, yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. I've seen that before, yeah.
So what you're doing is kind of like that,
except
much more
detailed. Yeah, more of a statistical scientific analysis, yeah, just trying to find the track of it. I think they also had a different motivation, as I recall, which is not my concern. I'm just approaching it as maybe a, you know, more scientific, scholarly fashion, yeah. I'm not trying to make the same point I don't think that they're making. Yes. Okay, and I'm not, and again, not being a textual scholar, that's not my concern. I'm just looking at, okay, how do these fall into distinct groups?
Why did you pick those particular sections?
I was just checking that some where I saw different variation, where I would see variations between, say, the Book of Commandments and some of these early versions versus modern. I thought that would be something basically interesting to present.
But you seem to have missed some of the sections that have to do with changes. That's why I'm wondering why you picked those particular ones.
I missed.
Would have more variants.
Okay. I just did. What's the? I guess I don't understand them. Why did I choose them? It was just do some analysis of what's going on there. Just to look at, give an idea of what kind of analyses that we would do. Are we going to just look at the whole thing and code the whole manuscript, or are the individual sections, are they evolving at their own rates? Okay. The individual.
Have used ones that showed more examples of variations in the text.
Oh, some of these I do. I haven't shown you everything that was in there. It's there are places where they've added whole. I don't have my spreadsheet here with you because I got kind of lost here, but there are places where essentially whole verses basically get added in, okay? Again, I didn't know what people would be interested in terms of seeing and what my crowd was going to be, but I guess there's one part who you're presenting to, but the idea is, yeah, there are some places where apparently whole verses get added in. Other places where things seem to be taken out, we get alternative readings. But I'm just kind of more interested in the actual evolution of the text itself is all I'm really. Well, they do, and they're incorporated because I got the whole sections in. Some of these sections actually go on extensively. I just thought I'd give some short representation here, short pictures here. Your. Define problem. What do you mean by problem?
Yeah. You care if anyone changes?
I would like to know. Oh, what do you mean?
The revelations of God or the angel vision as you do your scientific study.
Okay, does it matter to me? Yeah. On a personal level. But on a scholarly level, there's this whole objectivity issue that you're supposed to. But yeah, from a personal issue, I'm kind of wondering what's going on. I'm wondering why certain books in the Old Testament, which nobody denies, not even Jewish or Christian scholars, were heavily edited. Okay, did that affect the revelation? Yeah, I want to know why that was affected. That's kind of outside the scope of what I'm trying to do here, but where I'm just looking at the evolution of the text and how the text developed from the original handwritten manuscripts to something that we get today. Yes. I haven't at this point, but.
Because, if they tend to change more of the revelations that were initially written by, say, Walter Cowdery as opposed to Joseph Smith, if that has been changed more, then another section has been. And, one of Joseph Smith's revelations, then it's like, why would they edit Walter Cowdery's more than they would
have. So, there's some sort of authorship bias type thing going on?
Yeah.
I never thought of that, but that's an interesting idea there. Again, I'm kind of just in the beginning stages here. But that's an interesting idea. I've never thought of that, yeah. But in the. Right. And my general feeling was that the RLDS, or Community of Christ, was more according to the actual date in which they were given. It actually makes a statement like that on the title page of the book, the actual title that is listed according there. At this point, I'm not sure how that would have affect what I'm doing there, or just looking at the individual section changes. But you are right, they do, the ordering in part is due to that, the dates in which they were given. Yes?
Well, I'd add to that might be intermingling with a whole lot of comments and questions. Maybe if you look at some sections that were written earlier on, then there's a little bit of a problem with versus other sections that were written later.
Okay, that's something to consider. I haven't gotten that far into this yet. Everything, so.
Can you sum up your final conclusion of all this in one paragraph?
Is that I almost feel what conclusion do people want me to give here? What is just basically that the two texts since 1844. Not greatly, but we've seen two families arise since basically 1844. Okay? However, most of the variation, again, is not, that I'm seeing here, not between the printed editions. Yes, there is a lot of variation between the Book of Commandments and, say, the modern editions. There is some variation, you're right. But most of the variation that I've done in some of my analyses is actually between the actual handwritten versions and what made it into print. Actually, it was print, in the printed text, published text. Let me see if I've got my. I don't have that with me, but let me find my. If I can find his thing here. Is it this one? Oh, that's not the one I want. PowerPoint, my Excel. Just a second, let me find, and I can show you places where they've added in large points. It'll load up. Okay. Top two would have been the handwritten manuscripts. Where it says, behold, and lo, it must needs be that there be an organization of the literary and the mercantile establishments of the church in these handwritten manuscripts, but in all the subsequent. Now, this isn't in the Book of Commandments. That's why that's blank. This particular revelation doesn't appear in the Book of Commandments. But it is in the other printed text that I looked at. So this part that says, the literary and mercantile establishments of my church, that entirely is removed from the printed. And then we have something in there that's a big elaboration here, or a greater elaboration of. Maybe that's a clarification, I don't know, but it says, it adds in this thing where it says, and there must needs be an organization of my people in regulating and establishing the affairs of the storehouse for the poor of my people. I don't have, that'd be the DNC 78, I'm not sure of the year right off the top of my head there. So this little statement here is removed, and this big long statement here is inserted. Okay. There was another one here. I thought somebody like to find it here. Okay, so there's this part here that says in the handwritten manuscripts that you may come up under the crown prepared to you and be made rulers over many kingdoms, Seth, the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel. Skip over there. And makes preach. Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye are little children, ye have not yet understood how great blessings the Father has put in your hands. In between all that, as you might have noticed, is a great big gap. That's in the printed, but not the handwritten versions. Okay? Let me kind of get it here where I can... That's too much. So we'll skip it over the thing here. And that big gap that's there in between the Lord God, the Holy One of Zion says, who hath established the foundations of Adam on Diamond, who hath appointed Michael your prince, and there's actually textual variations among this big thing, among the printed ones, and established his feet and set him up upon high and given unto him the keys of salvation under the counsel and direction of the Holy One, who is the beginning of days.
That's section 78.
That part there, that big long section I just read to you, is not in the handwritten version. 78 doesn't make it into the Book of Commandments at all. Okay? But in the subsequent versions, the 1835, 1844, and the subsequent versions to that, some version of that is there.
In the Book of Commandments, Revelation?
No, as I just said, it's not in the Book of Commandments, as I just said. It doesn't make it into... The manuscript book, that those were on the web, that Joseph Smith Papers website, you go there, they have these.
Is it in there?
It is not in those.
So it was added later.
It was added later. That big long section here that we've got here, here are the two handwritten manuscripts. Notice the big blank. Okay, it's not in the handwritten manuscript. It's something added later on.
So
the why? I don't know. I just know that it's there.
Didn't write it in there. Joseph Smith probably did later, but
Joseph Smith added it. Somebody, I guess, was put with his approval later on. Yeah.
And then it would be interesting to know what parts were changed after Joseph's death that somebody else had.
Yeah. So, and I understand what people are saying there. So that's one major thing there that. You asked, so that's a big gap. That's a lot of stuff, yeah, from the original Revelation. Why it was added in there, I don't know. I'm telling you that it's there. I'm not making any judgment as to why it was added in there. So
here's an important question. How did you get that yourself?
It took me a long time to do all this stuff. Well, I can publish this preliminary one probably soon. You mean a whole larger, more complete thing? It's probably a few years down the road I'm looking at right now.
Are you
going to
do a kind of your general analysis of it later?
I hope to, yeah. If people don't. Okay. but there are other incidents, yeah, as you're saying, where things perhaps aren't in the handwritten manuscripts. I mean, the Joseph Smith Paper website, I'm assuming that's a church website. I mean, it's not something I made up. Okay? So it's, it's not in that part there. Okay? But it does appear in many of the printed editions, except for the Book of Commandments. That whole section doesn't appear, as far as what they've got listed there, doesn't appear in the Book of Commandments.
I think Michael here said best part is added to see your presentation next year.
Okay. Well, I hope that's true. So, I'm definitely want to continue working on this. It's something I've kind of got the bug on, but we'll see. Like I said, I'm kind of in a still kind of learning phase, I guess, in many respects here as far as what's going on here. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.